Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, we thank you for this opportunity to study what you have to say on the topic of stewardship and financial stewardship. Lord, may we apply these things to our lives so that we would bend our practices to fit your word and not try to bend your word to fit what we want in life. Help us to submit ourselves to your truth. In Christ's name, amen. All right. Well, this is week two of a class on stewardship. So we're talking, this is week two. We talked about finances last week, and we're actually going to continue that discussion this week. Last week, we talked about, you know, the biblical warnings about money, and specifically the love of money, coveting, and things in that, you know, that's really the heart of what the Bible warns about when it comes to money. Jesus warned about making earthly things our treasure. We talked about temptations that a person can fall into if they desire to be rich, and then talked about the use of money that the Bible commands, giving and tithing and all those things that were, you know, the good things that giving can do, and that the local church is to be the center of those things, that it's not, well, I want to give to the poor, I want to give to missions, I want to support, you know, ministry, so let me divvy out money, you know, these four different ways. You know, when we look in the New Testament, we see the New Testament church taking up an offering for missions to help the poor. We see all these things being done through the local church. That doesn't mean that it's sinful to give to, you know, if you have a friend who's a missionary and you want to support them directly or an organization, but we should think of the local church as the center of our giving. Helping the poor, we realized the Bible teaches that giving an inheritance can be an honorable thing, and taking care of ourselves and not being a burden to others. So this week, I'm going to discuss, I found a title, which I didn't end up using much of the points from that lesson, but I found a kind of a discussion in a Bible study called The Economics of Tomorrow. So that's kind of a little bit of a title I'll put to this, even though, you know, where that Bible study I found, I didn't use probably a whole lot else from it. But it is important to think about, we're going to be talking a lot of things this morning that relate to the future. So we could call it The Economics of Tomorrow. But overall, I want to continue fleshing out what I think is kind of a core idea of biblical wisdom with money, which is Christians should replace spending creep with savings and giving creep. In other words, the world says the more you make, the flashier you live, the more you spend, bigger, better. But biblical wisdom is the more God blesses you, the more wisdom you should practice with money, the more generous you should be, and that's what we want to try to practice. And so if I was to kind of flesh out in one statement what I think biblical wisdom with money is, it's unlike the world, which, you know, it's spending creep. Oh, I used to make $50,000, and now, and I live paycheck to paycheck, and now I make $100,000, and I live paycheck to paycheck. Funny how that happens. Of course, you know, a lot of things can happen in life along the way. The family multiplies in numbers, and we're aware of inflation and things like that. But the world, it's I want to make more so that I can spend more. And for Christians, it should be as the Lord prospers me, I'm more generous. So on that topic, the first thing we're going to talk about this morning is debt. Debt. D-E-B-T. Debt. One thing to be aware of is what is and isn't covered or discussed in the Bible. So the Bible discusses lending and debt from the perspective of personal lending. You know, I loan money to Alex. Les loans money to me. That's the kind of thing that's described in the Bible. We'll see the Bible describing it. Commercial lending, lending to start a business. The business of lending, like what a bank does, isn't directly described. Government debt is not discussed in the Bible. That doesn't mean that we can't take principles in every area of the Christian life. We should be taking principles that we learn and applying them to these various areas. But some things can be, you know, for instance, the difference between personal debt and government debt, the differences can be so great. It's like apples and oranges. We need to be careful about applying a verse to a situation that the original author did not intend, or the something that was just completely foreign to the original culture. So we want to be careful about that. If you have questions, I want to try to solicit some questions and some ideas as we go along, and hopefully we can do that. So let's start with talking. When you think about debt, you often probably think about it from the perspective of the borrower, but the Bible actually has, I think, more to say to the lender. So let's start by some verses there. So let's go ahead and look up, start in Exodus 22. Go ahead, and we're going to turn to some more verses. We're going to be turning to a number of passages today. Exodus 22, and we're going to start in verse 25. Exodus 22, I'm going to read verses 25 to 27. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a money lender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, and it is his cloak, for it is his body. In what else shall he sleep? If he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. So, it just assumes that this is going to happen, that people will be, that there is going to be lending and borrowing going on. And what we will see overall in these passages that will go right along with what we talked about last week is that we're to have an attitude of helping the poor, helping those around us who are in need, and not an attitude of ignoring them. And certainly, it is condemned to take advantage of them. So here, talking about to any of my people with you. So you're talking, you know, Moses giving the word of God, these words of God, that, you know, your brothers and sisters in Israel, you're not to be like a money lender to them. You're not to treat, you know, your this person that you're helping like you're trying to make money off of them. You shall not exact interest. If they are so poor that the only thing you can take as collateral is their cloak, you have to give it back to them before sundown. Like what else are they going to sleep in? What else is going to keep them from, like, shivering at night? And the thought would be, well, now, wait a minute. If I don't, like, kind of hold that over them, how do I know I'm going to get my money back? And the answer is, you're supposed to put helping them above your own interests. You're supposed to be looking out on the interests of others, not your own. The attribute of God here of compassion is brought in. I think of that verse that we said that we quoted so often last fall when we were studying through the book of Mark, that Christ came not to be served, but to serve and to seek and to save the lost. That is the nature of God. And when we help others, we are to be reflecting. That doesn't mean that it was wrong to receive repayment. I guess it kind of seems unstated here, but my assumption is that you could go back in the morning and then get that cloak. But the idea was you shouldn't see how many possible advantages you can get over this person. That's not supposed to be your attitude. Let's look at another. We're going to look at a couple passages here that are very similar in Deuteronomy. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 24. That shouldn't surprise you as you may have heard, as I'm sure Dave discussed, Deuteronomy, a second deuter word meaning like second onomy, the law. So this is the second giving of the law. So a lot of things from Exodus, or even to a lesser extent, Leviticus and Numbers, may be repeated in Deuteronomy for this new generation as they were about to enter the land. So I'm going to read verse 6 real quick. No one shall take a mill or an upper millstone in pledge, for that would be taking a life in pledge. So, you know, that thing that they would need, they would desperately need it to get, you know, for their daily bread. Don't take that away. And then starting in verses, and we'll read verses 10 through 12 of Deuteronomy 24. When you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not go into his house to collect his pledge. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. And then in there, verse 12, another repetition of the warning about the, you know, keeping his cloak. So what's going on there in verse, what do you see going on there in verse 10 and 11? What kind of attitude is it warning about?
A warning or?
Yeah, like what is it warning about? Like, why would it tell him to stand outside?
I don't know. First thing that comes to mind is, you know, expecting the dignity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's you know, you don't go into his house tearing things up and, you know, threatening the guy's wife and making him look bad in front of his kids and, you know, things again, just trying to, you know, tighten the knot on him a little bit to see if you can get that money from him. You treat him with respect. This is your brother. They are both children of Israel before the Lord. This is a warning to lenders, to people who would loan, to treat people with respect. And then go back just a chapter to Deuteronomy 23, verses 19 and 20. Verses 19 and 20 of Deuteronomy 23. You shall not charge interest on loans to your brother. Interest on money, interest on food, interest on anything that is lent for interest. You may charge a foreigner interest, but you may not charge your brother interest, that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you undertake in the land and that you are entering to take possession of. So, again, this is a very different economy. This is not a word to banks. The banks are not able to, you know, run a business making, you know, mortgage loans. This also, they did not have inflation. People were sometimes cheating with the money supply, but not maybe in the way that sometimes our government or businesses do. Our Federal Reserve has an actual target of inflation. Like they have an actual target of making money like 2% less valuable every year. And, you know, I put it that way. I mean, it's not like there's zero reason for it, but it's not commanding people to like lose money on loans. But the idea is not, okay, you're looking at your brother or sister, spiritual brother or sister, as an opportunity to make money. That is not, that's not what they're there for. That is not how you are to see them. I think we can all know how that can hurt spiritual relationships. It is worth noting, unlike the Quran, the Bible does not condemn earning or paying interest. Islamic law in its strictest form forbids any kind of interest, whether paying or earning. I have a number of colleagues and clients who are Muslim. Some of them, you know, by acting them, you'd never know the Quran says that. Some of them are very strict about it. But the Bible does not have that injunction. There is the assumption that various lending and banking practices will go on. Now, in the New Testament, we see, you know, there's parables of, you know, you could have put your money, you know, with the lenders and gotten some interest on it while that master was gone. And that is not condemned. That for that person, it's like, well, that would have been better than hiding it in a hole, which is what that guy did. So the Bible doesn't forbid, but it warns lenders about taking advantage of people and of treating spiritual brothers and sisters as people to take advantage of. Again, our attitude is to be helping, even if it means sacrificing ourselves. in some way. Questions or thoughts on that topic? Yes, sir.
Why do you think the lot allows turning interest of foreigners?
I can only, I don't know if there's a specific statement, at least not that I can recall. I think there the idea is like you can treat that more of a business relationship. Like somebody else in the church, if they need money and I'm going to help them, I shouldn't be seeing that as a business relationship. The idea, I believe the idea would be is there's a foreigner there, you can treat that as a business relationship. There's a lot of ways in which the law has Israelites treat each other differently than foreigners. This kind of fits along with that. We're supposed to be kind. There's certain attributes that we are, certain virtues, that we are supposed to be practicing and showing to everybody. But even in the New Testament, it commands us to have certain kinds of love and practices with fellow believers. So that's maybe a bit vague, but that I think it kind of follows along in with that. Do you have anything specific that you've heard that you kind of have pondered on or have caused you to ask that?
No, it's just curious that there are places where God commands specifically to be paying attention to the sojourner and the alien in your land because you used to be alien in Egypt. So it's interesting, but there are places not.
Right.
Or differently and less respectfully in some ways than the Greeks.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, there's things in the law that God gives just because people weren't ready for gore. And I'm wondering that this is that kind of thing, even though that's not God's preference.
Yeah. Yeah, you're thinking about like divorce. Yeah, divorce. Right. Yeah. I think it kind of goes along with what we see in the New Testament about we're supposed to reflect the love of Christ and the character of God and virtues to in general all the time, but we do it in a special way with people in the church. So of course, we've been talking about a warning to lenders, but as you're probably well aware, especially if, you've listened to different financial gurus, there are warnings to borrowers as well. Let's go ahead, Proverbs, go to Proverbs 22:7 is probably the best verse on this topic. Proverbs 22:7. Proverbs 22:7, the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is the slave of the lender. So this is a proverb. It's not didactic teaching that says, okay, you rich, you need to rule over the poor and you borrowers, make sure you're a slave to lenders. It's wisdom teaching. It's observing things and helping people live wisely and in a God-glorifying fashion, in a fruitful fashion, based on what a wise person with the Spirit of the Lord would know is true. And that is that when you are a borrower, the lender has control over you. Just think about even like a normal repayment schedule, right? You get a car loan, a home loan, right? Who decides what day of the month? You or them? You or the bank? The bank. Now, I guess maybe there's loans where you can say, oh, I want it to be the 15th of the month. I want drafted out the 5th of the month. But like, they set the terms, right? You sign. They set the terms. You sign. And if you cannot repay, who gets the car or the house? Right? They take it back, so to speak. This is where the warning comes in, that if you're taking out loans, be careful. And we've kind of seen, from those verses we read in the Pentateuch, what life was like and what some of those like situations would look like. If you were poor and you borrowed and you gave your cloak as a pledge, they were supposed to give it back to you at night. But I'm not sure how good the recourse was if they didn't. I mean, the Lord would hear your cries. And if it was a time period in Israel in which justice was being served, maybe there was means there. But you're at their mercy. And overall, the warning here, I think, is wise, and that, you know, when financial, you know, experts, secular or sacred, often give advice, they often warn about too much debt. That going into debt is a risk. They might use terms like over-leveraged. But if you're borrowing a lot, and you're making certain assumptions about the future, that you're going to make a certain amount of money, that certain conditions will continue in your life or in the economy or in whoever loans you the money. A lot of loans have in fine print that they can call the loan due at a certain time. And like, they won't do that. Well, weird things happen. 2008, 2009, remember how the economy was then? A lot of businesses went bankrupt. Not necessarily because they had lost all their customers or lost business, but they had loans which banks were able to call due at that time, and the banks did call them due, and the businesses didn't have the money to pay it, so they went bankrupt. A lot of businesses went bankrupt then for that reason. They wouldn't have went bankrupt in normal times, but they were a slave to the lender in that respect. Let me ask you, why do you think, in addition to some of what I've already talked about, especially at the personal level, why might debt be risky? What are some risks you're taking, what are some bad things that might happen if you get in over your head with debt? You could lose your job. Why specific? I mean, I can think of some things. Okay. So in other words, you lose your job and then you can't repay it. It is possible some careers, if you have financial troubles, you cannot continue that career. So I wonder if you were talking about that, but like that would be an associated risk as well. Alex.
You potentially open yourself up to temptations to unethical things that you might not have even considered before in order to try and pay that money back, especially if you're way over your head.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that one, but now it comes in my mind, the illustration. You've probably heard the name William Tyndale. He was the first one to translate the New Testament from the Greek to the English, and he was basically on the run in Europe, and the Catholic authorities in England tried, for over a decade to catch him. And you know how they finally caught him? A young man had borrowed a lot of money from his dad, and he gambled it away and lost it. And he was so scared and so desperate to get it back that he agreed to go find William Tyndale and turn him over to the authorities in return for that debt getting covered. So because of how in debt he was, he sold out one of the great reformers. So there's a lot of crime happens from people being in debt. Yeah.
Loss of opportunity. For example, if I might feel called to go street, but I have this huge debt that
Exactly. That's a great one as well. I think that doesn't just apply to debt. Like, well, I have to have this high-paying job because of this debt that I have, but also our lifestyle, our spending. We might be pretty low on debt, but if we just have built up a lifestyle of spending so much that we just, there's no way I could give all this up, that's also a risk. Any others? I could think of one or two more. These are great.
Scott said it's... there's been times in my life when there was a lot of debt before I got out. I mean, it takes away from what else you
can build,
or, as yourself, or and the flexibility, and indeed God's will that way. Mm-hmm. But, it just sucks.
I mean, you can't use the same dollar to pay interest and support missions, for example. Good. Any others? I got one more I wanted to bring up. If you're having financial difficulties, that kind of strain can hurt relationships, specifically like a marriage. And if you are young and thinking of getting married, or if you are married, for a short period of time or a long period of time, you probably are or should be aware of the fact that marriage or money is one of the leading causes of divorce when it comes to why are you getting divorced? What are the strains that cause divorce? Obviously, people aren't going to usually put very spiritual reasons on documents they submit to a court. But a common cause of strain in marriage is money issues. I'm sure those who have done any counseling here could testify to that, that money problems can cause marriage strains. Let's go to Psalm 37. Psalm 37, verse 21. One more warning here for borrowers. Psalm 37, verse 21. The wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. So what's the warning to borrowers there? What would be the sin? What would be the potential sin a borrower could commit? Yeah. There's a command there. You should pay it back. The wicked borrows but does not pay back. Now, it is possible, I think, for somebody to, borrow with all the best wisdom they can. Let's take a house, for example, especially here in Loudoun County. Pretty hard to get a house without a mortgage. And I think, on something that will last for so long and is, at least on paper, an appreciating asset, probably not an illogical thing to borrow at least some of the money for. And you can say, okay, well, what does our family need? How do we want to minister with it? I mean, if everybody in the church had the smallest possible house, there'd probably be some ministries that would be difficult. It might be hard to have small groups. It might be hard to do other, to host guests if everybody had the smallest possible house. So it's entirely appropriate to think, what does our family need? What are some ministries we want to do? And this would be the right house for us. And then through unforeseen circumstances, there's just financial difficulties that last a long time and make it difficult. That is very different than somebody borrowing as much as they can, borrowing for toys they want, to impress other people, and then, they're just on the knife's edge, and the slightest thing, like a short unemployment or a recession or the stock market going, things that happen kind of all the time here and there. And there's something like that happens and then, I got a default on my payment. And there's a lot of things you can borrow for, especially the electronics and the other kind of things in this world. You can borrow. And if you don't make your payments, probably get to keep it. Hurts your credit. Maybe somebody won't be so foolish to give that person money the next time, but that is a wicked attitude to borrow without having a real plan, a real solid plan to repay. And of course, the contrast here is not just, of course, the righteous person would repay, but they actually go beyond that. They are generous and they give. So let me just ask you, what if a person finds themselves in a situation they're in over their head with some payments, some debts, what should be the first things they think about as opposed to just how can they get out of it? Looking at their spending. Can I change my lifestyle?
Look for another source.
Mm-hmm. Work harder. I mean, it kind of comes down to probably one of those two things. I mean, you can get a little bit more formal in that there are ways to work with creditors to try to work out repayment plans and even in the world of bankruptcies, not all of them are the same. But it really comes down to, like, are you willing to, you know, spend less? Are you willing to cut back on your life? Or are you willing to work more or harder? A lot of times it can come down to one of those two things. I'm sure, again, people in leadership, people who have counseled, have often heard, you know, church leaders, I imagine, get hit up periodically for financial help. And I've been reading recently a biography of D.L. Moody. It was a biography that my great-grandfather, who was an elder in the Brethren Church, gave it as a, you know, and he was kind of retiring, gave it as a gift to my grandfather, who then gave it to me a couple years ago. I didn't realize that until I opened the book up and saw it. Because I just asked my grandfather, what's your favorite book? He said it was his biography of D.L. Moody. He's read twice. So, and he's 95, 96. Like, he's not taking it back, right? But anyway, so D.L. Moody is talking about what people came, they for asking for help, for handouts. They would always say, I'm willing to work, but there's no work. And so basically he would set out, you know, this is a very like 1870s kind of illustration. He would set out a cord of wood with an axe and, you know, and maybe some young man to kind of keep an eye on. And he would ask them, you're willing to work? Yeah, if I could do anything, even if it was just chopping wood. Yeah, absolutely. And so he'd be like, okay, well, go ahead, go out there. And if they would do it, then he would give them something. And he said over the winter that he did that, he had hundreds of requests, but only got four cords of wood chopped the whole winter. So that topic, just general borrowing, lending, debt. Any questions, thoughts on that before we move on?
It's just interesting how the culture is kind of moving towards, you know, getting away from your debt. That we, mm-hmm. as its proposal to go off and stew stupid debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people in this country believe that there's, you know, they have a right to be able to not have to pay the loan back. And it's just, I just see this eroding, you know, sense that people have an obligation to pay back that which they borrowed. And so it goes mm-hmm. right the face of what you're talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what they call.
Over my life, this is like, you know, something that I've never really seen.
I think being in my 40s now, I think I'm old enough to see a few trends, not maybe as much, but I agree with you. I think that's increasing. There's what economists would call moral hazard, which means, you know, you have to have something there to try to discourage people from being reckless. And so if you just start forgiving debt willy-nilly, business or personal, you're running a risk there morally. So let's talk about saving and investing real briefly. And we're not going to spend a lot of time here because the point here is not to talk like a lot about specific investments. So I'm going to go ahead and turn to Proverbs chapter 6. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 6, and then we'll go to a New Testament passage. And just look at a contrast here. Proverbs chapter 6, starting in verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber at once, like an armed man. So, here, there is the contrast of the foolish versus the ant. A little ant is sensible enough to prepare for the future. You can count on it. It is their nature. In fact, we use it against them. When I had too many ants in my house, when you have ants, I just did it recently, inside or outside, what do? How do you get rid of, what's one of the ways you get rid of them? You put out bait. Like, you know they're looking for food. So you put something that will trick them into thinking it's food if it actually, like, kills them. Like, we use it against them. A little bit morbid, I apologize, but ants, right? I have little kids, so they really like ants. I've had to work out a deal with them. If it's inside, I get to kill it. If it's outside, I promise I won't. But, like, preparing for the future is not foolish. It is faithful. What are, so the ant prepares for winter, or the ant prepares for the future. What are some things in the future or winters? They can be good times, they can be bad times, they can be just seasons of life. What are some winters, let's call them, a person might be wise to prepare for? Retirement. And again, we talked about it's not just, oh, I can't wait till I can retire and, you know, kind of steal some language from John Piper, illustration from John Piper here. Just so I can retire on the beach and pick up seashells. The majority of retirements in America are involuntary. Our bodies will just not work as long as they will live necessarily. And we need to be ready for that reality. Ageism is also a factor. People maybe just not won't hire us at a certain point, at least not for certain things. So retirements, that's probably the big one that Americans think about. That's a great place to start. What else? Could be a positive thing, a negative thing. AJ?
Mm-hmm. You know, things ready, medical, something comes up. And...
Yeah. Ever since Genesis 3, things break, people get sick, it is a fallen world. God has already warned you about this, preparing for that potentiality, inevitability, really. It is going to happen.
Yeah. The question, because then I'm thinking of Jesus' words to the rich man, sell all that you have and give to the poor and have your treasure in heaven. So how much do I give and then rely on God? I think tug of war, we're going with what you're just talking about and what Jesus was telling the rich man. And, so we're asking, God's will.
Yeah. We'll touch on that a little bit more here in when we look at that parable, maybe even the passage you're thinking about in Luke chapter 12. It's going to be a tension, but you talked about giving there. And when these winters come, some other ones I thought of, unemployment, disability, recessions, if you run a business especially, but even if you just have most jobs can be affected in some way by the economy. And dumb decisions that are not yours can still affect you financially. And so a wise person could be ready for that possibility. College, we've got a college student or two. We have a bunch of them here in the morning. I think you're here because you have kids here at college. Am I right? Yeah. So, and it's not, I don't know that there's a biblical command that like parents, thou shalt pay for college. But if you have kids and that they plan and you think they plan to go to college and you feel like equipping them in that way would be a great part of equipping them for life, like thinking through some plan might be a good idea. Do you plan to help? Do you plan not to? Coming up with some plan, whatever that looks like, is a good way to avoid them like graduating with like $100,000 in student loans. And that, again, there's a lot of different ways that can look. And they don't all need to look like the parent, writing checks. But planning ahead, thinking about these things ahead of time is a wise thing. Let's go to that important passage there in Luke chapter 12. Kind of referenced this already. Luke chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 13. The parable of the rich fool, Luke 12, 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. I'm not getting what's mine." Right? Even the law probably, even the Old Testament law probably says I'm supposed to be getting some of this money. Why am I not getting it? But he said to him, "Man, who made you a judge or arbiter? Who made me a judge or arbiter over you?" Now, is Jesus a judge over him? Does Jesus have authority? But that's not the point here. And he said to them, so now, verse 14, he said to him, now he's going to talk to the whole crowd. It's a point here. "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness." So you could covet even that which is rightfully by law yours. probably the guy in verse 13 had a legal right to that money. And yet he could still have covetousness. That's a word for that greed or envy in his heart. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. Well, sounds like a good thing. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. I got so much. My bank only lets me put so much in that account. It's all full. What am I going to do? He said to him, I will do this. Tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. If that man would have known that it was going to be his last night on earth, he wouldn't have spent all of his time thinking about what to do with all his extra money. He would have spent time focusing on his soul. And we can talk a little bit more about that next week when we talk about the stewardship of our time. But we need to be aware that eternity is coming and that we need to be putting an emphasis on the preparation of our soul for that time. So I love this parable because the rich man, he had plenty. He had enough money. It said the land of a rich man. So he's already described that way. He already has plenty, but he's getting even more in his ideas. Let me tear down barns and build bigger. And then I'll definitely be sure. But as we talked about last week, you know, at first you feel like, well, if I have this much in savings, I'll be okay. And then if I have this much in savings, I'll be okay. And then if I have this much, you know, that number never goes down. And there are situations in life. I mean, if you're young and single, you probably don't need as much in savings as like a family of five with one income. But people... there is just this law of creep that we just need a bigger and bigger buffer. And if I don't have it, then I won't. And one verse we won't have time to turn there, but you can write it down, Ecclesiastes 5:10. You'll never be satisfied with money. Even when you have it. You don't have it, you think you have it. No, then when you have it, if I have a little bit more, that the Bible warns you that that is not the way it will work out. So going back to the beginning, a Christian should replace spending creep with savings and giving creep. The goal of saving, the goal of investing, is not so that you can have the biggest barn possible. The goal is not even to make it impossible that you will never have anything bad happen to you. This is a fallen world. That is impossible. And God can always figure out something to get you to trust in Him that will force you to that point. The point we should think about, the role for a Christian of saving and investing, is so when that winter time comes, unemployment, retirement, the big expense looming on the horizon, that you don't have to stop taking care of yourself the way the Bible commands, and you don't have to stop being generous and giving and tithing the way the Bible commands just because you no longer work. The goal is not to have a bigger barn. The goal is, in whatever circumstances, to continue doing the things with money that the Bible commands you to be doing. Let me finish. I think I every week finish at like 10:03, so it's 10:01. So I guess that gives me 2 minutes. Just a couple quick piece of advice, just for how to apply, is first, and these are things you've probably heard about. But budget. Now, that can become legalism, and that can become obsession, but there's a lot of wisdom in it. If you want to make sure you're handling your money God's way, you need to know how much you have coming in and where it's going. It's just like you would take an account of your life, of your heart, of your mind. You know, where am I sitting against the Lord? How, you know, comparing that to the scriptures. You can do that with your money, but if you don't have any idea of where anything's going or anything's coming from, it's difficult to know what you need, how, where and how to improve. Make sure, second of all, you're discussing your finances, especially with your spouse, if you're married, Money can be a difficult topic, but a good, strong marriage should be able to talk about money. If you're engaged, that can be part of what's included in the conversations. If you're single, you can maybe get help from your parents or a spiritual mentor. It can be part of discipleship to make sure that you're honoring the Lord with these things. And then finally, get accountability. I mean, that can be partially in with the previous one. But what I mean by get accountability is make sure that people in your life are able to tell you if they see greed or things like that cropping up. It is often something that we do not talk about much in the church. We hesitate to condemn, to point out in each other's life, but we should be willing to do that. It is a sin. Greed is a sin, covetousness, and it's difficult with money. It's like the tip of the iceberg. We see what people spend. We don't see, for the most part, what they give or save. So we need to be very careful. You say, oh, that person got that car. They must be, you don't have any idea how much they give or how much they save. So be very, very careful. It should be something in somebody very close to you that you see their heart. You see their heart practicing greed and fear and encourage each other to do what's right. Let's go ahead. Lord, we confess that we too often love money instead of you. And we trust in money in the bank instead of trusting in the Lord who created us and redeemed us. Forgive us for greed and covetousness and materialism, and help us to obey you with our money. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.